The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 15th of January, 2026. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you listening. It's great to have you on board. We're here between now and 11 o'clock with lots of information for you, lots of news, lots of views and interesting conversations as well. We love your interaction with us. It's so critical to the programme. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. Or alternatively, easy for me to say, give us a call on 07491 25000. Emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And we've got a wonderful community of watchers of the programme. It's another way for you can take it all in. If you're at home, you can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick via the YouTube app. Give us a like and subscribe, by the way. Or at least a like, or at least a subscribe, one of the two, or both. And you can watch us across your mobile devices on that platform, but also on Facebook and on X as well. And big changes in the world of X. We're not going to keep talking about it. I don't want there can be some exhaustion hearing the same things regularly, but it seems to be that X now, those intimate images or those compromising images that the app was creating, they've done away with it now, which is good. That'll come up in the papers, I am sure, because I looked at it and suggested it, and will reflect it. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning, as the Mercosur row shows no signs of abating. The government has been accused of selling out the farmers, with opposition parties claiming Irish agriculture will be among the big losers from the deal. The criticism first aired by Fianna Fáil backbenchers on social media last Wednesday night came during a dull debate on a Sinn Féin motion opposing the deal on Tuesday evening. Sinn Féin's deputy Martin Kenny said the deal is a simple betrayal of farmers, and he called on the government to publish all the moves you made to block it, prove that you've done what you said you've done. Micheál Martin's leadership is under renewed focus once again within his own party's online meeting. He faced the wrath of his backbenchers in their outright condemnation of his alleged dithering on backing the deal in the past year. And that dithering, if you want to frame it as such, was present during last week's visit to China, because the day before the government announced it would be opposing Mercosur, he was like, well, we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens in the next day or two. So there you are. The Donegal News, focusing on the roads on their front page, concerns that motorists are flouting the speed limit on one of Letterkenny's busiest roads has prompted fresh calls for urgent safety measures to be put in place. It's emerged that the vast bulk of motorists are exceeding the speed limit on the Glencar Road above McGovern's Junction. That's close to the Gaelscoil there. The issue has been highlighted by Councillor Jerry McMonagle. Interesting, actually, the topic of Letterkenny traffic raised in the Dáil last evening, I believe. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin brought up the matter. I didn't have a chance to listen back to the audio, but interesting that it made the National Parliament. The Derry News this morning. A Derry woman who lost her daughter to drugs has vowed to keep campaigning for stiffer sentences for drug dealers. Pauline Duddy has been campaigning for tougher sentencing since her 21-year-old daughter, Jasmine, died in February of 2023 after taking Cregaballin. Cregaballin is usually prescribed by doctors to treat epilepsy and nerve pain. It was made illegal to possess the drug in Northern Ireland without a prescription in 2019. On to the Nationals now, and Elon Musk has walked free from jail, but unfortunately for him, it's likely to be a fleeting departure. He either loves the place or is incredibly principled, whether his principles on this matter are misguided or not. Everyone has their own opinions. But anyway, he is out. A High Court judge has freed Enoch Burt from Mountjoy Prison, even though the school teacher has not purged his contempt. Mr. Justice Brian Cregan said yesterday he was making the order in the interests of justice to allow Mr. Burke adequately prepare for a legal challenge he's brought against the appeals body that is considering whether Wilson's Hospital School was correct to sack him. The decision prompted an extraordinary series of exchanges between Mr. Burke and the judge. Mr. Justice Cregan told Mr. Burke, who appeared by video link from jail, that the order barring him from the school was still in place. So, and this is where sometimes I believe the Burkes perhaps aren't their own best friends. So he has been released from prison so he can appeal, bring a legal challenge against the appeal body that will consider whether or not his dismissal from the school is sound. So if he were successful, that dismissal, theoretically, I presume, could be reversed, though I can't imagine him ever working there again, and therefore he'd be vindicated in his position. But rather than prepare for that appeal, he's committed this morning to go back to the school, which means he'll go straight back to prison. And the judge commented that he's never seen a situation like it before, where he's seen someone able to shoot themselves in the foot. So, as I say, you know, it is a victory, but it doesn't appear like a victory to him. So he's going back to the school this morning. On to the Irish Times. This is something we might talk about a little later on. The majority of people in Ireland overestimate the number of migrants living in the state, according to a new study from the Economic and Social Research Institute. The misperception strongly associated with negative attitudes to migration, it found. The study was funded by the Department of Justice and involved an anonymous survey of 1,200 adults, and it found that most people believe immigration is happening on a larger scale than it actually is. Alongside measuring attitudes, the research asked participants to estimate key facts about immigration, such as population size and reasons for immigration. On average, participants estimated that 28% of the population was born abroad, though the highest official figure is 22%. I don't think that's a million miles out, actually. I think that's a decent guess. But anyway, participants also estimated that 14% of the population was born outside the European Union, UK and North America, almost double the true figure of 8%. Now, that is more interesting because I think sometimes maybe people don't like include England, Scotland, Wales, other European countries when they estimate how many live here but weren't born here. But the figure from actually outside Europe, born outside Europe, is only 8%. Now, the thing is, it's where people are located and how they're located. And this is something the British have been commenting on as of late. It's perception. And if you congregate large groups of people from wherever they're from in certain areas, it's always going to give an impression that they're greater in number than if you had accommodation throughout society, throughout the community, you know. So I can understand people being confused by that because it's about perception and it's about rapid changes of communities as well. The Irish Daily Mail tells us that the state is likely to begin the process of building or purchasing creche premises later this year. That's according to the Minister for Children. Figures released last year by Pubble, which manages early years programme, showed up to 40,000 children under the age of 3 were waiting for a place in a creche. That's a massive amount of people. And that's a massive amount of parents who are perhaps not able to get back to work or are having to make certain choices. Minister Norma Foley said yesterday has been a year-on-year increase in the number of places being provided throughout the country for a variety of different reasons. There are challenges, and these challenges are more acute in some places than they are in others. Obviously, the lead story on the Farmers Journal is going to be that Mercercourt deal, as was outlined in our conversation with MEP Luke Ming-Flanagan. Their headline, Mercosur hinges on MEPs. The battle to stop the EU-Mercosur trade deal, though there is a battle also to make it pass, let's not forget, and it is winning at the moment. But the battle to stop the EU-Mercosur trade deal is now down to the European Union's 720 MEPs. Quite simply, unless they vote to reject the trade deal, it will be approved. A simple majority of 361 is required for that to happen, with most observers feeling that it is a big ask following last Friday's ratification of Mercosur by the member states, despite Ireland's no vote. So 720 MEPs, they have votes. I think Luke Ming-Flanagan estimated that about 200 MEPs are going to vote no. So they need to find another 161 MEPs, which is effectively a doubling of the opposition to Mercosur, which seems very, very unlikely, doesn't it? There is another option to try and seek its postponement for another wee while, but we shall wait and see. So Gardaí are probing 200 child sex abuse images that originated from the X's AI platform Grok, as we've been discussing in recent days, and this is the Irish Daily Star. Pressure is mounting on the government to ban X in Ireland as Grok is allowing users to digitally undress women and children and men, of course, or anything. They can put a bikini on a cow. You know, this is what this technology can do. Obviously, the focus has been on women and children, but Elon Musk himself was put in a bikini. But anyway, overnight, there's no point me reading on because things have changed. Overnight, X has announced that Grok will no longer be permitted to do such things, because they were facing bans. And even in California, in America, they opened up an investigation into it. And what they had done is not allow free users to do this, but allowed paid users to do it, which is crazy. It's like, you know, Premier Porn or something. But anyway, they've got rid of this feature, and Elon Musk had doubled down on it a few times, but it's gone now. Now, you know, so you search what they're searching for in other platforms, you'll find it, I'm sure. But anyway, this is a problem that we've raised on this show many of an occasion, and it's in The Sun this morning. Tens of thousands of children are leaving primary school without ever receiving any of the three dental checks they're due to get. The Oireachtas Health Committee heard this is due to a dentist shortage. HSE officials yesterday revealed over 70,000 children finished primary school last year without a single teeth examination. Isn't that crazy? I think that's terrible, really. I mean, we're supposed to be checking their teeth, and we're not. I remember ours being checked and it's a long time ago. They were able to do it 40-odd years ago, and they can't do it now. And it's set up, really, that you know, like the guardrails when you're bowling? It's like the guardrails are to extractions. You know, it's easier to get an extraction now than it is to get your teeth looked after as a young person, or cleaned, or early signs of gum disease being spotted. But it's no problem then. You want to go and get them pulled out. There's something seriously amiss there, isn't there? Joe on Facebook: does anyone know, is Brazilian beef for sale in Donegal? Brazilian beef is already for sale in Ireland. It's not called Brazilian beef. There are cuts called picanha, which is from Brazil. It's a cut of beef. Free-range cudril, C-U-R-D-R-I-L. That's also a Brazilian beef product. So Brazilian beef is for sale, and there's nothing to stop it being sold. I'm not sure if there's any restaurants that sell it. But anyway, they would probably, if they did, say, well, we have those rules and regs in Europe to ensure it's all safe anywho. But yes, no, Brazilian beef is already for sale in Ireland. So this wouldn't be a new product onto the market, so to speak. Magella is with me now. Hi, Magella.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Not so bad, thank you very much.
Okay, and I hope everyone's okay in the house. Magella, you had an experience recently where you had to call the emergency services, and you're going to share that story with us. So I'll allow you, or I'll ask you, to pick it up wherever you wish to pick it up, Magella.
Yeah, my daughter was suffering all weekend with a pain in her side and been sick on and off. But she went to her own doctor on Tuesday morning, and he examined and he said her appendix was very inflamed, and he gave her an injection for the pain. So she got home here. We were getting actually ready to go to the hospital. She was told to go in A&E, and she got violently sick and the pain got worse. And there were nobody here, only me and her. And of course, as a mother, I was scared and I didn't know what to do. So I rang for an ambulance at 1:37 and explained everything, and they said they would send an ambulance.
Magella, is that AM or PM, sorry? Is that in the...
PM.
In the
PM,
afternoon,
sorry.
Okay, yes. No, no, it's not. I just wanted to make sure I'm following you. Right, 1:37, you rang.
Yeah. And the 999 caller rang me back at 2:30 to say that it would be another hour and a half to 2 hours before an ambulance could arrive,
jeez,
that they were backed up and could possibly get someone to take her down to A&E. So I ran across to my neighbour, my good neighbour across the road, and she was home. And thankfully, she took her down to the hospital. Now, she was still being sick and the pain, but thank God, ruled out appendicitis. We got home at 1 a.m. in the morning, but she suffers also with endometriosis. Mm. So she's been referred back to Gainey. So it's just, we thought it was appendix, but
any pain like this is potentially could be an emergency. It could be an aneurysm or anything, right? So effectively, if you were to rely on the ambulance service, and they explained they were backed up, you would have been waiting, or she would have been waiting, over 3 hours at home for the ambulance. So effectively, really, you're being told, I would argue, that for this case, the ambulance isn't available. It almost sounds like that, right?
Yes. They are backed up out the back of the hospital with patients in them because they have nowhere. the ambulance crews have nowhere to bring them into the hospital until they get room for them.
They can't hand them off
effectively.
I've seen
that firsthand on Tuesday night. Yeah, on Tuesday night. The ED was packed to the rafters. People sitting, it's like a third world country, sitting in casualty.
Mm.
People sitting in chairs, people standing. Honest to God, I don't know how the doctors and nurses go on every day to be facing that every day, day in and day out. And ambulance staff, I don't know. And I wouldn't be going to casualty, only she was referred by her doctor to take her.
Yeah, but I think that was the right thing to do.
And that's happening all around the country.
Yeah, but I think that was the right thing to do. And it's happening not just in the south of the border too. We were chatting to a lady in the last couple of days who had a horrendous experience in Antlagelvin as well. I just don't understand why we can't get the health system right, Majella. You know, what needs to be done? I'm not asking you, right? Well, it's just...
No. Yeah. People need to come to the hospitals and be in there from the morning to night to see what's going on. Mm. There's no point coming to visit for an hour. I mean, there's old people sitting on these hard chairs. It's terrible. And I was helping as best I could on Tuesday night, asking them, did they want water and all? They had nobody with them.
Mm.
And I was sitting with my daughter, and I thought, well, I could help some way. But the nurses and doctors, like, they're doing their best. My daughter was well treated and got scans and all done, but
there's
an overhaul of everything needs done.
What worries me, Majella, is, and it almost keeps me awake at night, in fact it has in the past, unfortunately I know people who have done an 8, 15, 20-hour shift in the ED and they won't go back. You know, I think it's particularly older people. And I know there's people listening now who their mums and dads or granny and granddads have says, I don't care what happens to me, I'm not going back there. So those numbers aren't included.
Exactly.
You know, those people aren't on the numbers we're talking about in the ED. And what happens to them, you know, end up with sepsis or something, God forbid. Do you know what I mean? But there are people actively avoiding going to the ED, and that really is troubling. They never, ever should, because hopefully everyone's triaged and those that need the absolute urgent care get it. But unfortunately, people don't want to go through what you and your daughter did, even though thankfully it seems that it's not appendicitis with your daughter.
No, it's not. There's older people sitting in their houses ready to maybe near death before they would actually go to the hospital now.
Yeah.
And that's 2026 now. That shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And the thing about it is that there are people listening to us now, Majella, and have listened to us talk about health and the hospitals and what in the past, and they probably don't really know what we're talking about, because we've a population of like 160 plus thousand in this county, and thankfully the overwhelming majority of them perhaps haven't sat in ED or been in the hospital to see firsthand what you've seen and to experience firsthand what you've experienced. And I think if everyone understood what we're talking about and understood the tough circumstances for listeners, we probably wouldn't have the hospital that we have now, if that makes sense, because there's a bit of ignorance to how bad it actually is unless you're there.
Yeah. And the longest you're sitting, like you're going to be sitting, the shortest time I would say would be 10 hours if you're lucky.
Mm.
Maybe 12. There's people sitting there 30 hours.
Yeah.
35 for a bed.
The problem is the target for elderly over 70s, I think, I'm going to double check it or someone out at the desk can, I believe it's actually 8 or 9 hours. So in other words, if you leave a person over 70 sitting on a chair in the ED for 7.5 hours and then they're seen, you've hit the target. I'm going to double check that, but I believe it is. It's certainly, I remember seeing the hour and thinking that's shocking. Okay, Majella, I hope everything's okay. It's a horrible condition, endometriosis, that your daughter is having to endure. It's an absolute nightmare of a condition. So hopefully she's getting all the treatment she can, and I'm sure she's getting all the care and love from mum that she's due. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm sorry for that experience.
Thank you, Greg.
That you had.
Thank you
Look after
much.
Yourself, Majella. Yvonne, you're listening to Majella there. You can relate to this story. What happened in your situation?
How you doing, Greg? No, I just wanted to highlight it as well. I mean, I know the staff, the paramedics are just fantastic. Not their fault whatsoever, but I had a family member who had chest pain. just at the weekend, and no doc had rang an ambulance at about 9:20, and was told and explained to them that it was chest pain and the pain was radiating on her neck and her back, which is alarm bells. But they said there was 13 ambulances held up at Letterkenny at that time, and that she was on a priority list, which is fine. But they didn't get her to 2:10 in the morning, so it was 9:20 at night, and they didn't get her now to 2:10.
That's almost 5 hours, isn't it?
What's that?
That's almost 5 hours.
That's nearly 5 hours.
Wow. And she was all the hallmarks. If you Google those symptoms, that's like right straight to the ED, isn't it? That you know, and I know now Doc obviously had their concerns, which is the professionals in this situation, but it had all the hallmarks.
Yeah, all the hallmarks, Greg. And she was getting worse, you know. I did ring back and the girl on the phone was absolutely lovely. But again, her hands were tied. But that's really alarming, Greg, that somebody in the community would have chest pain and you wouldn't get an ambulance for nearly five hours. And I would have brought her in, only I couldn't move her. Every time I went to move her, she was getting very pale. But it turned out it wasn't anything cardiac, whatever else it was. But that's not to say it wouldn't have been a heart attack, Greg.
Okay.
You know, and if that, like, it's just if it happens to, if that happened to one of your family members, you know, when you sit in there and
but
you
it
know
does happen, you see,
Yvonne, heart.
That's the thing. Your situation is a lucky one, right? And it was the same with Magella. And I use the word lucky in terms, you know, I think you understand how I mean by that. Like, in other words, we're able to
absolutely
talk now because everything turned out right. I think if, God forbid, if it hadn't turned out right, you'd probably be so distraught that me and you wouldn't be talking. And it would go under the radar, right? And then by the time you got over your grief or your loss or whatever, time would have passed and you would think, well, I'll pursue it. So it's the lucky cases and inverted commas that we're hearing about now, but we're not necessarily hearing about whereby that 5 hour wait's too long.
Oh, 100%, Greg. Absolutely. It also does, you know, I was just thinking, no, the first responders as well, there's no first responders in the area for Letterkenny, you know, because we're so near the hospital as well, you know. Even if you had a first responder out, you know, until the ambulance came, you know, it's just getting so desperate out there, Greg, that you nearly have to take matters into your own hands, like.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen,
you know what I mean?
Thanks for making your point and making it so clear. I really do appreciate it. And hope everything is well going forward. Look after yourself, Yvonne. I mentioned the target for over 70s. It's actually over 75s. It's a 9-hour target. So that's if you do what you're supposed to do in 8.5 hours, you've met the target, right? So you can have someone who's 89, and if they sit without being admitted, if they need to be admitted, if they sit for 8 hours and 59 minutes, that's actually okay. They've met a target. Isn't that crazy? Just a word on the roads, by the way. There's been a road traffic collision at Galdona Road. Where is that, Caroline? Just in Manor, okay. Galdona Road in Manor. The road is closed at the moment. Apparently there was some black ice in that area as well. I'm not saying that contributed to the road traffic collision, by the way. Just be careful if you're in and around that area. So there's a collision at the Galdona Road in near Manor. I don't know how serious it is. I hope it's not serious. I pray it's not too serious. But we'll keep you updated in terms of the road opening or closing and any further information that's relevant. Tanya McColl, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you today?
I'm good. Good to chat with you. Right. I mean, anyone who's sort of commuting at certain times of the day, this might ring a bell with them. You were speaking out about the safety on the roads, particularly in the context of schoolgoers.
Yeah. Yesterday especially, it kind of came to a head. this last couple of years, I've been watching one or two just bus companies, local bus companies, who park over both lanes of traffic in the road to let the children off at home time, which is around between 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock. And these kids, the doorway is in the middle of the road. And in fact, yesterday, the parent was on the footpath on the left-hand side of the road where I was driving down. The bus had me blocked, and the parent stands in the middle of the road while the child is let off in the middle of the road. And I gesticulated. I put my hands up to the bus driver, you know, why are you doing this? You know, and I did make a face. And he came out extremely aggressive to me and let me have it, you know. But I told him he's doing these children no favours. And this is not educating children on how to use the road, on how to navigate traffic. I mean, I don't understand why they're doing this, Greg.
I would imagine,
I put it on TikTok yesterday evening.
Yeah, and I'll be very interested to get the feedback. I would imagine, and I've seen this myself, the bus, some children are going to be getting off to the left, right, where the door is, and some are going to have to cross the road to get to their homes. Is the bus driver trying to shield the young people from the traffic because they've seen so often cars just whipping up the outside and nearly taking the kid out of it? Or is it possible that this is the least, you know, this is the better of two evils?
Yeah, that's possibly what they're doing. I mean, that's what I think they're doing. But again, that's not educating the children on the dangers of traffic. And the after effect of that I personally have seen is children walking off buses into traffic. I did see two kids last year were nearly hit, and they just came off the bus with their heads and their phones. And the poor woman, I felt so sorry for her. She nearly hit those two children. And that's not to mention ordinary traffic at roundabouts and things. I mean, I've lost count how many times a child has walked out in front of me at the hospital roundabout with a phone in their face. It's not educating. I think my point yesterday was to this driver, you're not doing these children any favours. You're not educating them. You're dumbing them down.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
We had to learn.
Yeah.
We had to learn everything, Greg. And there was ads on television when I was a child. Stop, look and listen. Every child. Now, I know children don't watch terrestrial television now like we did. But there's still education out there. There's still mummies and daddies and grannies and uncles and aunties to teach them the dangers of what a car can do to you.
So what you're saying really is, and you've made it quite clear, but just to paraphrase, we think we're protecting them. But what we're actually doing is protecting them potentially in one instant, but not educating them so they can protect themselves in all cases.
Correct. I mean, how do these children navigate life if we're protecting them so much that when they do go out into the real world? I mean, I think maybe this was kind of in my head because the day before I read a letter in the Irish Times from a teacher, a very concerned teacher, and all the comments underneath the post was from other concerned teachers and parents about children losing basic life skills, how to tie their shoes, how to zip up a jacket. I mean, children are falling over now in the playground because they don't have the coordination to play. And if we continue to dumb these children down, how do they navigate the world? That was my point. I think I was frustrated yesterday when I did gesticulate to the driver. When I say gesticulate, I raised my arms in the air and gave him a face. And he came out extremely aggressive, which was A, very unprofessional in front of a bus full of children. That's my personal point of view. But yeah, they're doing them no favours, Greg.
Is it possible to, and this is not withstanding that there are obviously lots of things that we have to be really aware of and what have you. Is it possible, from what you're saying, that if a child is mollycoddled to the point whereby they can't tie their own shoelaces or button up their own jackets, as was outlining in that letter, that they go into a school environment and that school picks that up as something else? You know what I mean?
Yes.
A diagnosis or whatever it might be.
A diagnosis, yes. I mean, I saw a thing, was it yesterday? I read in a paper about ADHD social media ADHD. And I was like, is this a thing? And apparently it is.
We have to be careful because, you know, it might be a challenging conversation, but like this is, this ties into a number of other things, especially when it relates to children. Like we do at times have to just make sure we're doing the right thing. You know, we often think we're doing the right thing, but we also, I'm a big advocate of saying, right, let's stop a second and say, are we doing the right thing? What is best for children? Or do we think we're doing the right thing? And it's not just in this space, it's in lots of different spaces as well. But you're quite right. You know, we would be familiar with adverts if you're of a certain generation where this was, and you're quite right also, I don't watch terrestrial TV anymore, if I'm honest, so I wouldn't see the ads. But we've all seen the look left, look right, you know, a catchy theme tune and all that stuff. Is that still ongoing?
That's right. I don't think it is. I think the government have dropped the ball in regards to that, educating kids. I mean, it's funny, another thing came up the other day about, you know, children near water. And I remember ads on television as a child about that. It was like, I think the ad was, where's granddad gone? And poor granddad had fallen in the water. And it was the dangers of water. And the ads, you know, they scared you when you were a kid, but that was the point of them. You know, that was the point of the ads, was to make you stand up and listen and go, oh, I can't put my hand in the fire because I'll get burnt.
Yeah, and also, you know, too, in terms of road safety, right, we our default seems to be shock and awe, right? So in other words, if you look at the RSA, the way they try and educate people is death is calling on the phone, you took your eye off the road for a second and you tumble into a group of kids. I am not saying that that's not effective, right? But what's happening in between 0 and 100? Do you know what I mean? So 100 being the shock and awe ads. Where's the sort of the education from NINRA, you know, so that this actually is normalised, that you know that, you know, why are we leaving it to the point where we have to scare the living daylights out of someone to drive safe?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. You know, I mean, there's also a part of, I think the children today are more desensitized than we were as children.
I think, though, I'm not sure they are, right? I think that's, again, Tanya, I'm not being argumentative. I think that's almost like a default position. I think that no, they're not. Let's start from NINRA or wherever it might be, talking about safety, talking about mortality, and in an age-appropriate way, to say that by the time you get to a certain age that you value the gift that you have, the gift of life. I remember at school being told about the gift of life and how important it is and how it's not something that you can be taken for granted. You know, I
take for granted.
I don't know. The truth probably lies somewhere in our convo, Tanya. But listen, thanks so much. What was the reaction, by the way? Sorry, I was so keen to get a question to you. I didn't get the reaction you received from your TikTok.
I got reactions across the board from people who agreed with me that, you know, they can't believe that even parents are stopping now in the middle of the road to let their children off for school to catch the bus. And I've also had a lovely message from a bus owner. And his point, and I absolutely would agree with this point, he said possibly that driver's frustrated that there's people overtaking the school bus to the point where it's dangerous, and this is his way now of stopping cars overtaking. I have driven in countries, Greg, where it's illegal to overtake a school bus if the school bus has stopped at the side of the road.
Yeah, United States is one, isn't it?
That implemented here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, and I drove there a couple of years ago. I'd love to see that implemented here. It would frustrate people no end, but kids would be safe. They would get off on the correct side of the road, and then they would navigate traffic to get to the other side of the road, like we've all had to do for generations.
I see it every morning, whereby a bus pulls in to pick up a couple of their more grown-up children than national school children in very dangerous areas we talked about yesterday, actually. And you can't sit behind the bus because then you get overtaken as well and you feel you do have to go out.
That's right.
All right, Tanya, listen, thank you very much for sharing your views with us. And I have got quite a bit of reaction in relation to that. Bus drivers in general do a brilliant job, says a listener, under difficult conditions, which we all agree with, and Tanya would agree with that as well. Without this woman or anyone else interfering in the work, they know best. Doing it every day, I wouldn't blame him for being so aggressive. Well, I think I would always, no one needs to be aggressive. But you see, this is one of those situations where, and I'm not putting words in Tanya's mouth, Tanya's actually said towards the end of that conversation as well, listen, you know, in other countries, you can't overtake a bus. So that would relieve the other frustration that led to bus drivers doing this. So we are all on the same side of safety, I think, by the way, because we can be very quick to all of a sudden start knocking heads when really I think we're all interested in child safety, aren't we? Right. It's a good idea. The busman is trying to save, the children. I see often around the town, I presume they mean Letterkenny, 56-year-olds getting off a bus, the excitement of the day. Some people are trying. Okay. I'm a bus driver for 30 years and I block the road because it's for the safety of the child crossing the road so it doesn't get knocked down. I've been onto the Gardaí about it and they've said this is okay. The road is blocked because of the dangerous and ridiculous driving of some people. Agreed. So we could all be on the same page if we go back before where you felt you had to do this and start talking about this unacceptable overtaking of buses when they're pulled in doing a job. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin is Sinn Féin spokesperson on fisheries and the marine and has been speaking in the Dáil about the, as he phrased it, the continual failure of Uisce Éireann to deal with the many issues with water and sewage in Donegal. And I know you represent the county, but I'm going to have to speak about your own home patch. You know, it's dry January, dry February, dry March. Across in Ishone, it's one after another. Like, I feel sorry for the councillors that committed to posting this on their socials because they're having to do it two or three times a day.
Yeah, you're spot on, Greg. And, you know, this has been an issue for quite a while, the lack of accountability from Uisce Éireann, the fact that you don't have a designated person to speak to. I mean, back in the day when Donegal County Council were responsible for water and sewage, you could lift the phone, you knew who you would speak to, you could get a good assessment of what was going on and properly communicate to your constituents. That's the proper way to do business. When it comes to Uisce Éireann, Irish Water, we have to send an email. And that could take days before we get a response. Totally unacceptable when people are looking for answers about water being down again and again. And yes, it's a particular problem across the Inishowen area. And in recent weeks, a big problem in the Buncrana Parish. And if you don't mind, Greg, I'd like to take you through just some of the background to what's been going on in my own parish. So to start with, Dulock is a lock up in Ahawil. It's in a hill above Buncrana. It served the people of the town for a long time. And I had become aware of problems with the levels there being reduced quite drastically. I went up and investigated it myself, and it was a very serious issue. My understanding was that Irish Water, Uisce Éireann, had undertaken some type of engineering endeavour that has reduced the water supply up there. I emailed them in good faith and asked them to give an explanation for the very serious reduction in water at that lake, and they attributed it to a drought. Now, I spoke to people from the community, including farmers who'd be up there a lot, and they laughed when they heard that, because this has been going on for a long time, not just during the summer period when you have a issues maybe with some logs. This continues as I speak. There are people in around that area over to Drumfries who are without water because of what's happened up there, and I'm not getting proper answers. So that was the first issue.
Yeah, and I'll let you continue in that regard as well, Padraig. But I mean, like, there's overnight water cuts in Pettigo now because of a lack of water. I think Milford's still under a hose pipe ban, if you want to call it that. And we're being told it's because of dry conditions. The word gaslighting is overused, right? But, you know, when you're being told something that you know is demonstrably not true, especially from a semi-state company, it does feel like gaslighting. We're not stupid.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And, like, this body, Uisce Éireann, Irish Water, as it was first called, was set up by government. And I don't think this is accidental at all, that we have a situation where we can't get speaking. As I said yesterday and in recent days in the Dáil, I can't get speaking to a damn human being. mean, I just think I find that absolutely astonishing when we're talking about a basic service like water and sewage. And as you say, Greg, it's in communities across the county. But in terms of my home area, Buncrana, just to continue on, then you had water. So I talked about Dulock up in Ahawil, that reservoir up there, that feeds into the Slavery plant and then onto a very good section of Buncrana town, which is, a good sized town, second largest town in Donegal. And they had no water. Couldn't get any answers out of them as to what was going on. Eventually, when it was restored, then you get an email telling you what you know already days afterwards. Next, you had the boil water notice over the last week or so, and people wanted to know what caused this
What's the connection?
discolorization. What was in the water? If you boil the water, was it safe? Very basic questions like that, and I put them all to Éisce Éireann. And what I have now is telling me what I know already is that the HSE tested the water. The water is now safe. Everything's back. It's like an AI, artificial intelligence, writing an email back to you in PR language, not a human being giving you the answers to the questions that you asked.
Of course. You're going to advocate we're going to platform concerns of people currently on the supply. But this is what makes housing targets so laughable. How in God's name are we going to add further properties, either, water in, sewage out, when we're hearing this type of language? How can we trust Éisce Éireann to deliver what would be required to deliver homes? This is the biggest blockage to home delivery, poor infrastructure. How could any planning permission be given on that on the Dulock Reservoir or Milford or Pettigo when the current service is so poor? Do you know what I mean? Like that's the problem, even if we did have the builders and the money and the will.
Yeah, I was speaking to my colleague again yesterday, Jerry McMonagall and Letterkenny, just to recap on the Letterkenny issues and the Letterkenny is a town that needs to grow, and I'll be dealing. I'll be speaking to the Minister for Transport, the Dáil, later today about the issues of traffic and the need for him to come up and deal with that in Donegal. But in terms of water and sewage, like Éisce Éireann are just failing to have the vision about how you develop the town. But one of the things they're doing is taking the water from the Eddy Fullerton Dam. Now I can tell you something now. If Éisce Éireann Irish Water were around at Eddy Fullerton's time, that dam would not have gone ahead. They just don't have the vision. They don't have the resources, it seems to me, to push on and do the things that need to be done. So what are they
Okay.
doing? They're basically taking water from Eddy Fullerton, leaving Inishowen bereft, and no vision for the hills around Letterkenny.
I get you. Unfortunately, Padraig, the sound has gone to pot for some reason. I'm not sure if it's on your or my end. I can just about hear you, but I'd say it's impossible for listeners. And I'm not sure it's something we can resolve in the 30 seconds I have left. I actually thought you spoke in the Dáil yesterday on the traffic issue in Letterkenny, so it'll be interesting maybe to hear what is said in response to you. But for now, listen, thank you very much indeed. Unfortunately, technology has beaten us to some extent there. What's your views? 0860 25000. Get your WhatsApps and texts into us. Give us a call, 0749 125000. You tune to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio, and we're with you until 11 o'clock. So, as I say, you've got between now and then to get your views into us on the issue of buses. That woman is 100% right. Pull in, lift passengers, cars up along their side, stick on indicator and pull out. An indicator is a signal of intent. It doesn't give you the right of way. Most of the drivers think they're the boss on the road. Shame on the bus drivers. Let's not get too hard on them. Right, so it emerged overnight that the AI tool on X will no longer be able to undress pictures of real people. Elon Musk's platform says Grok won't produce fakes of victims naked or in really revealing clothing anymore. The restriction will apply to all users, i.e., free and paid. Here in this country, Guardian Commissioner Mann are investigating the issue. There's some investigations been launched in California. And of course, the UK government said if Ofcom wished to ban it, X as a whole until such time, or Grok as a whole until such time as this situation was resolved, then they would back them in doing so. To discuss this, Dr. Owen Fury, lecturer in computing and AI at ATU Donegal. I'm sure, Doctor, that Elon Musk was dragged to the table kicking and screaming to agree to this.
I'm sure he was, but I think with all of these things, it is really concerning, very much for ordinary people out there. But unfortunately, this is the reality we're in. The AI Pandora's box is open, And I think there's a little bit of the fact that it's Elon Musk and the fact that it's Grok that it's making so much noise in this one. These tools have been available for a long time. Now, they've got very mainstream at the moment, which is very worrying. But also, with these tools, if you put these in the hands of probably more than likely adolescent boys, they're going to do bad stuff with them.
Yeah, and just so people understand why I've been taking this issue so seriously, I have no doubt that thousands and thousands of images of women and girls in Donegal will have been created using Grok over the course of the last month or two, whether we like it or not. I have no doubt. And they are there now. They're in the ether. And that is why I have been talking about this so extensively. You know, we were trying to put the genie in the bottle. This was happening an awful lot. And you're quite right. Adolescent boys probably are those that are going, wow, I wonder what this person looks like in a bikini. I wonder what that person looks like in a bikini. And it was a free-for-all up until very recently.
Mm. Yeah, well, it has been. It's, you know, there's some more drastic measures have been taken, obviously, for X to actually completely ban it is a big step. There are some countries, I think in Malaysia and Indonesia, have completely geo-blocked X, which it can be done, but it's not easy. And to do this, it's like taking an aspect of a tool and then shutting the whole thing down because you don't like it. Or a car that maybe, you know, does something and kills someone and ban all cars.
So you quite rightly pointed out that X got an awful lot of attention because of who's at the helm. Also the fact that I think it was integrated into conversation on that platform. But you're also quite right, Gemini and ChatGPT still currently allow this to happen.
Yeah.
So really, this hasn't resolved this problem with artificial intelligence. Is there a solution, Doctor?
No clear one. Okay, there's many aspects, there's many facets, and a lot of that is, I suppose, education of people. This, we talk a lot about AI literacy and what can be done, and people need to be, it's a bit scary, but they need to be a bit more realistic about what is actually available here and the potential dangers of these things. Now, this has highlighted it. In a way, I'm happy that it's highlighted. I'm not happy for anyone who's, you know, suffered for this at all.
It's a conversation that perhaps is too late in the evolution.
Well, it's too late, but it's going to be ongoing. It's going to be ongoing because as these tools develop, they're in a massive race, as you mentioned, you know, and they don't want to limit their one too much because they'll fall behind. So even with this stuff, the likes of Grok and Gemini are still being integrated into like US military systems. These aren't going away. They're not going to get shut down because people have shouted loudly.
Right. Cars are produced that do 200 kilometres per hour, right? And, you know, the law is enforced to ensure we stay at a safe level of speed, which is determined by any given country. But ultimately, whether we speed or not is down to us.
Yes.
That can be harmful to us, but it can also be harmful to other people if we involve them in a road traffic collision. Do we have to get our head in the space whereby these tools are going to be available?
Yeah,
and it's going to be down to educating people as to how we use them and so on and so forth. It's a clunky analogy, but is that not the reality?
Yeah. Well, it is. The education is a massive part of this, an actual responsibility. And the problems happen often with, again, the people who are likely to be slow to understand the rules are probably those who are developing and growing. But that is one part of it. There are certain technical things that can be shut off, and they definitely can be shut off. But people want the tool to be as useful as possible. They are all in a race to become like the Google, the one that people go to all of the time. And they don't really want to slow down its capabilities. Plus, a lot of the capabilities, they're not even 100% sure what they are yet. Mm. There's a massive movement called AI for Good. And they do a lot of really good stuff with AI. But as soon as I read that, everything, I think straight away AI for Bad. Because we don't have to think that far to think, well, how could this be misused? And as you use the analogy of the car, you use the analogy and say, will we ban a pen because someone wrote something bad? You know, it can go to those extremes, but there's a lot of different aspects. We try hard and we've got projects in the university. We had a very good one called Minding Media there a number of years ago that is about, you know, media literacy for kids. Now, there's more of these developing and they're coming out. There's a little bit of catch up with them because the AI stuff is moving so fast at the moment. You know, it's really growing exponentially the capabilities. And there is a, like, the genie's not going back in the bottle in this case, but we can teach them. And the other thing is, like, Grok is only one. There's far more damage done on Snapchat than there is on Twitter or X, you know, particularly by young people.
But you know, the thing that's particularly concerning about this, so I'm not sure if you're on about maybe the sharing of intimate images or bullying, right?
Yeah.
But that might be the decision a person makes, and it could be the wrong decision to take a picture of themselves and forward this on.
Yes.
But what the AI allows people to do to the point where you can't determine it from a real image, to take an image of you and put you in compromising gear. The problem with the AI in this area, I think, as well, is some people might see a function of AI to edit their own photos.
Yeah.
And I can't see how, technically, they are going to be able to take off what would be a very valuable feature of AI with how it could be abused. And I don't see, at the moment, personally, I think this is X at the moment circling the airport dumping fuel.
Yeah.
This is not really where we're going to end up.
No, I don't think so. And these tools, funny, image filters and on selfies and stuff were a massive thing for a long time. And people want their photo on Instagram or whatever to look their best version possible. And if it's tweaked a little bit, but if it's tweaked a little bit, it can be tweaked a lot. And as you rightly say, you know, if the images are out there, people forget this all the time. The internet's like an elephant. It doesn't forget.
No.
You put something up there, it's out there. And it can be used.
And the scary thing, though, as well, and this is why people are suggesting stick emojis on any pictures you over the face of your children. The thing about it is things are so advanced now. When you're explaining, you're losing, right? So someone has doctored an image of you and you argue, that's not me, that's not me. Yeah. There's going to be at least 50% of the population saying, well, sure, you'd say that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. People will speculate a lot of time.
Is there a technological solution to this?
Well, the technological solution is to shut down the massive generative AI engines, but that's not going to happen.
No, that doesn't
happen. So
that takes away
filtering.
The
there's
benefits.
An awful lot of, there are a lot of technical solutions, to do image classification and analysis and find ones that have more skin in them, for example. And these can be blocked straight away. Now, people might say, oh, this is my holiday pictures, I'm on the beach, that's okay. But that can be done. However, it makes the tools less usable. And then people will move to an alternative. Or, for like a lot of these things, they're regulated in the European Union because the headquarters is in Ireland. However, they're American companies. America is a completely different deal.
I actually believe there's only one solution to this. It's a solution that actually is not going to be resisted by women that are the victims of this or children. And that is accountability. Mm. And that means age verification. And that means that if you post something, if I doctor an image of you, that it can be traced back to me.
Yeah.
And honestly, that is the only, it'll always happen, and there'll be the deep web. And I would say back in the day, people were cutting faces out of magazines and sticking them on images, right?
Yes.
This is different, though. It's going to be about, if you're going to be online and you're going to do stuff, you're going to have to be held accountable for whatever that is. And people don't like it, but I can't see any other solution, Owen.
No, well, I do think it needs to be properly licensed, like as you use the analogy of driving the car, that people are. And there are blockchain type of technologies where you can trace exactly what has been done and when it's been done, and makes it very hard to come around. But they do slow stuff down, and they will limit adoption. And there's a huge amount of money involved. So a lot of it's catch up, unfortunately. An even more drastic one would be, don't give people phones. We would love to go back to that, but at certain ages, like we go down this discussion we often
stuff
have.
I was seeing on X, though, these were fully grown adults undressing, the White House spokesperson and stuff. I've no doubt it's more damaging down at the level you're referencing. But these are men, women, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. These people should know better, obviously. But when things are adult tools and they're given to adults, adults will do adult things with them. The problem is they're not just given to adults, and neither are phones. And what's the appropriate age? 17, 15, 13, 12, 9? Who decides? But we definitely, and there are strong moves, countries like Australia and Denmark are doing more advanced things to try and limit these. We need to follow up.
But the kids in Australia scrunching up their faces and bypassing the age verification.
Yeah, I know. There's always, that's the thing. It's hard to get these technically right, but it's not impossible. They can do a lot. And China actually had been doing a lot for a good while. I know people like to say China's always the bad one here. They had done a lot. Their parents actually had to put in their own passwords or their own fingerprints to enable access.
But they're not going to do that here. The West, in inverted commas.
Well, the West, we like to think we're above this type of stuff, but...
The American economy is banjaxed at the moment, right? There's a couple of reasons for that, the high level of debt and all that. But another factor to this is the too many chips in the one pot, technology, AI, etc. I've been concerned about the potential for an AI bubble burst. But I suppose it's like anything, if you're concerned about it for long enough, eventually you will be right, okay? But it just feels Meta, massive layoffs in their VR section yesterday. I know it's not the exact same, but it's in the same space. And as I say, concerns that the so much investment going to in America is in this space, that if it does eventually, you know, you just get a few big companies like you did with VHS, for an example, that there's going to be a massive problem if you've backed the wrong horse. Are we on the brink of seeing a bubble burst? Like, well, I'm still waiting on Google to make Gemini available on smart speakers. Yeah, how long do we have to wait before we see AI where it's actually day-to-day functionable and usable?
That stuff is very close. You know, it is very close. And there's different aspects. You know, there's a lot of announcements. You know, the what was the Google Glasses, the new ones. You can see nice fancy Ray-Bans with them on. And they've got the same problems that it had before, and they've got AI-enabled. So this stuff is everywhere. There is a risk that's coming, and companies like NVIDIA are probably massively overvalued, but they don't want to take a risk being left out because there's too much money. And even, it's a question, is it even real money? You know, it's like a lot of these things moving around, but there is a risk. They don't want to be left out. Where exactly it's going, Ireland is quite well placed in this space, but what the ultimate result will be, nobody really knows.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I wouldn't be putting my I don't have a pension, but I wouldn't be putting my pension in.
No, I wouldn't be betting on them. I'm betting on them either, but I wouldn't be betting against them either.
No, indeed, of course, that's it. Dr. Owen Fury, lecturer in computing and AI at ATU Donegal. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Right, now I mentioned a little earlier on that a new study has been published. It's in relation to public perceptions of immigration in Ireland and the relationship to immigration attitudes. Co-author of that said report is Evan Karen Key, or Evan, I beg your pardon, Evan. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are things?
Good, good, good. Right, okay, so the headlines were that there is perhaps a misunderstanding of the scale of immigration in this country. But I suppose I don't want the papers taking it, right? I want to hear what you have to say. So what do you see as some of the key headlines from this?
Yes. So what we've done is we've asked, you know, a large representative sample of the Irish population about migration. And we've compared that to what we know from the official statistics. And what we know is that people have pretty strong misconceptions about both the scale of migration and the reasons why migrants come to Ireland and other kind of aspects about the migrant population in Ireland. So, for instance, some of the key statistics that we're looking at here, when we ask people about the proportion of all the people living in Ireland who are from outside the EU, people on average guess that it's around 14%. And some people guess a lot more. When in reality, we know that it's about 8%, which is, you know, almost half of that figure. We also see this with international protection. So when we ask people about recent non-EU migration to Ireland, people who are applying for residence permits, or people who are applying for residence in Ireland, we find that people on average think that it's around 20% of those people coming to Ireland that are coming for international protection. In reality, of recent migration to Ireland, it's only around 10%. And if you look at the, you know, international protection as a whole across all migrants in Ireland, it's only around 3%
of the population. So in relation to that, sorry, so if we're seeing, so firstly, people are miscalculating how many people from outside Europe are coming to Ireland. And of that, the majority of those then presumably are coming here legally on work visas, etc. The amount that are coming here seeking protection of all of those is actually quite a small percentage.
Yes, it is, absolutely. And I mean, we also find this when we ask, this translates as well over to employment and tertiary education. So when we ask people how many migrants, of all migrants in Ireland, how many migrants are employed, people guess that it's around half, or around 50%, when in reality it's closer to 80%, which is even higher than the Irish population. When we ask people about tertiary education, people guess that it's around 35%. In reality, it's around 60%, actually, that have a third level education. So what's interesting here is not necessarily that some people have misconceptions, because people have misconceptions across all areas of life. You know, people aren't going to be up to date in all the statistics about Irish society. But what does normally happen when you ask about these kind of misperceptions is that some people overestimate, some people underestimate, and overall it averages out pretty close to the true number.
See, I wonder, is it a misconception or perception, right? Because I think sometimes this is how we house people as well. You know, so if you live in Letterkenny, for an example, you will see a high concentration of international protection applicants, and you would probably say, well, 30% of the population must be, surely. But if you live in Killybegs or Donegal Town, whereby you're far less likely to see people seeking international protection, you're going to think that it's much less. So I think sort of this, not that we're going to get into this, but I think this sort of talks to a little bit of how we as a state locate and house people as well.
Yeah, well, this does touch on why this is the case. And, you know, we can't be sure, but we have thought about this and we've looked at the other results in the report. And what we know as well, now, one of the reasons why we don't think it's fully down to why, you know, what people are seeing day to day and maybe like a, you know, availability bias or something like that, is that, for instance, we don't find a major difference between urban and rural in terms of perceptions, but we also find, you know, misperceptions and other things that people don't see on a day-to-day basis. So, for instance, people assume that there's a lot more migrants in prison, when in reality, there isn't. People also overestimate the amount of migrants that are in social housing. And those aren't things that you're necessarily going to see in a day-to-day. They're more private. They're more, you know, separate. We also don't think that it's necessarily like motivated reasoning either, where people have negative perceptions and they're therefore exaggerating the number. Because we know that some people with positive attitudes actually overestimate themselves as well. But what we do think potentially is that it's down to media coverage to some extent and to the way people talk about migration. Naturally, media and the way, you know, the way that immigration is talked about is drawn to the extremes and it's drawn to different aspects. But it doesn't necessarily, naturally, news isn't going to
but
get to
the again, country, you know? Yeah, but I mean, see this logical information that you're giving to us now. If we look at what's coming from government, it is they that are talking of cracking down, increasing the amount of time before people can be reunited with their families. You know, Jim O'Callaghan speaking, you know, not necessarily in glowing terms about the benefits of immigration, you know, and you have to report what they're saying. That doesn't really apply to us as much as maybe the Nationals that you're referring to. But, you know, this angle is not what we're hearing from the actual government who sit around a cabinet table and make those decisions. They're talking about communities being disrupted. They're talking about changes to payments. They're talking about reducing the amount of time someone can stay in certain accommodation. Do you get where I'm coming from? I'm not trying to deflect, right? But this is what's coming from the government.
Yeah. So obviously our job as the ASRI here is to provide the evidence, essentially, right? And what we're doing is, you know, we're just providing the evidence to inform this debate and to show that, you know, these are the kind of the real proportions, these are the real statistics, and hopefully to kind of, you know, potentially in terms of correcting these misperceptions, you know, to provide these statistics so they inform future debates.
I think also it is about education. Like that question you asked about the amount of people living in this country from abroad, I'm not sure everybody knows people's rights if they are resident in Britain and Northern Ireland or if they're resident in Europe about the freedom of movement in terms of going to live wherever the hell you like. You know, I don't think necessarily everyone gets that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is, what this does raise is the question of whether or not we can really have an informed debate about migration while we have these kind of strong misperceptions about proportions and about here. And we do also find these misperceptions matter quite a lot for, or they're at least closely linked with attitudes. So broadly speaking, we find people who have the strongest misperceptions also have the strongest negative attitudes towards immigration as a whole. And we also find they're more likely to cite immigration as one of the main issues in Ireland. So broadly, we think that, informing the debate about immigration will be a positive thing and a positive thing for the country.
And also, we ourselves have to be free thinkers. You know, you will see an incident involving a migrant being amplified 50 times over 10 instances on the same day involving someone who's Irish and all right. Thanks so much for joining us, Evan Karen Key there, co-author of The Public Perceptions of Immigration in Ireland and the Relationship to Immigration Attitudes. Right, on the buses. It's not the bus driver's job to teach the children the dangers of the road. The job is to get them home safely. Cutting across two lanes, I see it all the time, which makes sense to stop cars overtaking the bus while children cross. It takes a minute or two and the traffic is moving freely again. Surely this person has the cop on to know the bus driver is doing it for the children's safety, of course. But what she was saying as well is that really for the children's safety? Would we not be far better off putting more emphasis on the rules of the road and education in that regard? I sit behind buses that, and the buses in some areas they'll sit in the middle of the road, and other areas they'll pull off to the side of the road. They know where the children are getting on and off. And to be honest with you, personally, I have no problem sitting behind a bus. I just sit there and twiddle my thumbs and I make sure I've left work, left enough time from home to work to accommodate that. A caller says we are constantly giving out about where we stop and park. Look at the size of our bus in comparison to the cars. Not easy to park or stop without blocking something. Another, coming from bus driver, it's not our job to parent a child and teach them how to cross the road. What we do is get them to school or home, but off and out the bus, either into the street if the house or the school is safe. That's it. It's not our job. Discrimination to teach. It's not our job to teach a child anything. Hi, Greg. Tell that woman what that is. The bus driver protecting the children getting off the bus, with speeding drivers overtaking the bus, knowing that kids are getting off and will be crossing the road. They block the road to prevent this. A lot of love for the bus drivers, in fairness, I must say. On the issue of water, I think we need to look more at what is being spread on our land and is then running into our rivers. On the issue of AI, what about Snapchat? It's the worst offender and popular with children. Why are we not mentioning Snapchat? Because there's two different conversations here. We need to, obviously, and we talk about this all the time on this program, educate our young people and us as adults as well, what we share on Snapchat or what's appropriate. So you might get a girl or a boy say, you know, if you loved me, you'd send me a picture. That picture's taken and sent to Snapchat. It shouldn't happen, right? But that's a choice a person makes to do that. Whether or not they're of the age to make that informed choice is a different conversation or the same conversation. What we're talking about here is whereby I get a picture of you standing innocently on the beach in your clothes and your slippers, and I ask Grok to put this woman or put this fella in swimwear. That picture, to any eye, will look exactly as if you were standing there in this type of clothing. That's what we're talking about. It is unauthorised editing of images. Worse than AI is the fact that DMs through Twitter's new encrypted chat cannot be reported through Twitter, so you could be put in a chat unknowingly, and if anything dangerous or harmful comes up, Twitter has no way to review that under request. Wow, crazy. Okay, back with our next guest on the Greg Hughes Show very, very shortly. Good morning to Kathy, Joe, Dolores, Sebastian, Rosemary, Beth, Rosie, all amongst the regular viewers of the 9 till, it's not the 9 till noon show, Caroline, it's called the Greg Hughes Show. Why do you keep telling me to say that? It's not my fault. It's the Greg Hughes Show. Right, Michelle, welcome to the programme. Thank you for joining us. We want to talk about pensions with you, if that's okay.
Yes. Hi, Greg. I just was made aware during the week. My father has been in hospital for the last 6 weeks and he wanted me to check his bank account. So I went and got a printout for him and realised then that his pension hasn't been paid in since the 19th of September.
Wow. Why?
Well, I rang up the pensions officer in Sligo, because there is none in Letterkenny, and they said that there was a public service card posted out to him in September and it was returned to them, which is not possible because he lives in a small town. The postman puts his letters into his letterbox, so it was never posted to him, obviously.
So what is the status of the pension now? Will they, did they suspend it? Did they believe maybe something, God forbid, had happened to him? Like, you're in this now. Hopefully you'll be able to get the arrears, but is it going to be a simple process? I mean, you shouldn't have to, Michelle, but I'm thinking now about this much-needed money.
I know, like, he should have got his fuel allowance and everything, you know, which nothing went into his bank account. So, like, what I'm thinking is, like, they're saying that they posted out a card and it was returned to them undelivered, which would not be possible that it would be returned undelivered, because the postman would have put it into his letterbox.
100%, yeah.
So they would not have been able to have it returned to them. And I just want to make other people aware, if they have elderly parents or, you know, even with a little bit of dementia or anything, to check their parents' bank accounts for them, that this could possibly have happened to other people, you know?
And they could be down, they may not realise, they could be down payments for weeks and months. Like, let's say they had a little bit of reserve that was meeting the bills. They might not know that this money they presume is going in wasn't going in.
Well, Yeah, that's what happened with my father. He did have a reserve. He had a little bit of money in the bank. And because he'd been in hospital for so long, we went to order oil for the house just so that it wouldn't run out, you know. And the card was declined.
Yeah, interesting. Really interesting. And listen, we know...
We were in shock.
Of course, yeah. If that card had got into the local post service, your postman woman would have made sure it got to your dad. Like, so I can't... I think you're right in being cynical about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just... I think it's an excuse for I don't know what. But I don't believe that the card was sent out and returned undelivered. That couldn't be possible.
Are you a named contact for your dad? I'm just wondering, was it difficult for you to sort of ascertain this information, or were they quite open with it when
it was? Yes, it was very difficult. I went into the bank, and they couldn't tell me much because I wasn't the account holder.
Yeah, there we go.
But I just said the one thing I want to just check. Is his pension still going into the bank? And they looked and they backtracked it. The last payment was on the 19th of September.
Mm, okay. Well, your dad's lucky now, to have you to chase this up, but not everyone does have it.
Yeah, but you think they'd send a follow-on letter or something to say, oh, due to your card being returned, we are stopping your pension. There was no follow-up letter, nothing.
Mm. Yeah, okay. It's troubling.
You know, so I just want
for helping us get
people
that info
be
out
aware
there.
Of that. Yeah. Just for everyone, just check up, keep an eye on your elderly parents' accounts and things like that. You know.
Mm, okay. I hope your dad's out and well now, Michelle. It's a long stint in hospital.
Yeah,
takes
no.
A while to get the strength
he'll be
back
out soon. Well, thanks a million.
All right, good stuff. Passing our best wishes if he, right. Maybe he does listen. I don't know. Okay, thanks, Michelle. 086 60 25 000 if that resonates with you. Listen, we have had hundreds of comments this morning on various issues. We really do appreciate that interaction. They're all read. We try and get out as many on air as possible, and we do make sure. I've read out dozens already today. In relation to the speed sign at Toobin Farm, there are two. One going through Toobin heading for Derry. That digital sign is fine. When returning, heading to Buncrana, there is a digital sign at the other end, which is embarrassing for whoever is in charge. Limited 60 kilometres. I think if you're doing 55, it comes up red and telling drivers to slow down. This line is faulty. Thank you. That's more information on. I understand it fully. I got a comment on this yesterday and I was going like, well, okay, what's going on here? On the issue of immigration, he's not given the overall real number. How many non-born Irish people in Ireland today, including all those who now have Irish passport citizenship? The baseline to do the maths, if native-born and non-Irish-born, no, they were also referenced in that as well. As of Census 2022, there were nearly 632 non-Irish citizens living in Ireland, making up 12% of the population. That's figures 3 years old. And I'm going to have to check that because we need to make sure we're not splitting hairs. When you say non-Irish, do you mean they don't have Irish passports, or do you mean they weren't born here? Because half of Donegal, our parents worked in Glasgow, in Birmingham, in London, all over the world. There's many, many people in this county who, and many, in fact, in politics, who were born outside, who would be classed as not native Irish, if that makes sense, right? But I want to double check your figures there, just to be sure, because, as I say, facts matter, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but there's different groups of people. There's people that are born to Irish parents outside of the state living here. There's people from the EU and Britain that have decided to move here. There are people then from outside of the EU who have decided to move here or have fled here. So there's a groups of different people, and we need to make sure we've got all the descriptions right to make sure we're putting out good information. So just on the population breakdown in this country, and some of this is 2026 info, some of it's a little bit older. So 80% of the people living in the Republic of Ireland were born in Ireland. So that's 4 out of every 5. Of the 20% that were not born in Ireland but live in Ireland, 25% are from the UK. All right, so that leaves 15% of people living in Ireland that aren't from either Ireland or the UK. 10% of people now living in Ireland are from outside the EU and the UK. And of that, overall percentage as well. 3-4% of Ireland's population are refugees, and the majority of those are Ukrainian refugees. So that's the breakdown of the statistics just in relation to what we were talking about there. Greg, what does IDing people achieve that can't be achieved by policing the corporations producing this stuff beyond letting the government track your internet activity until they expand beyond it? These suggestions of chat control and ID verification don't pass the proportionality test. It's applying a general warrant on the whole population under the assumption we're all nonces, which is a slang word for paedophiles, which I prefer to call them what they are, is paedophiles. I hardly think it's fair that we have to give our text messages to the government and our IDs to Musk and Zuckerberg because the government has lost any semblance of a spine it ever had. Would you let the guards just walk into your kitchen for no reason without a warrant? Because think of the children. No, but if there was a strong suspicion... But that's like saying, to extend your analogy, that's like not policing at all the abuse of children, because the majority of us don't abuse children. There has to be some level of oversight. And how could you walk into the kitchen of someone you suspect to be an abuser unless you knew who they were? Right? So to be honest with you, I understand your point. I get where you're coming from. I understand the reference to proportionality test. But there are checks and balances in every other part of life. But people want to do what they want to do online and perhaps don't necessarily want to be tracked in doing so. Margaret Gallagher of Gallagher's Buses. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Greg.
Sorry for holding you there. You're annoyed by this chat we're having this morning.
Well, I just thought I would give a bus driver's perspective compared with a car driver's perspective on the blocking of the roads. So this lady seemed to be annoyed that she was being held up, and she felt that we were losing the life skills of children, i.e., fastening laces, zipping up jackets, putting on jackets. Those life skills don't kill you if something goes wrong. But if a child is getting off a bus and a car hits it, there's no second chance in a lot of the cases.
Yeah.
A lot of the buses are blocking the road to safely allow children to go to both sides of the road.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are finding is cars are actually mounting the footpath.
Wow.
And almost knocking children down. That is against the law. Now, I have checked with the guards. We are perfectly within our rights to get the children safely off the buses. We are allowed to block the roads with our hazard warning lights on. Now, the hazard warning lights are there for a reason. The warning is there's danger, there's something wrong. So I still don't understand why people think it's okay to overtake a bus with hazard warning lights on, overtake on the footpath, overtake on horizontal lines. Now, there's a particular crash. There's maybe about 3 buses. There's children crossing for all the different buses. There's children coming out of the creche for the different buses. And the cars still insist in driving in and out across the footpath into the creche.
Yeah. Well, listen, Margaret, I've no problem with buses stopping to safely.
And I mean, I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always acknowledge anyone who waves, you know, and lets me, like the children across the road, I wave to them, I acknowledge, I appreciate their efforts. But just for someone to complain that, you know, it's not right, we're not teaching children anything. The roads that we had, or she's chatting about 20, 30 years ago, like I started driving 45 years ago.
Yeah.
The roads that I was driving then is not the roads I'm driving.
And also, too, we're talking about teaching children. It's the adults we need to teach. I mean, anyone trying to overtake a bus in the middle of the road and going up on the footpath should have their license revoked on the spot. Margaret, thank you for that. I really do appreciate your time. Right, 2 guests on this week's Business Matters podcast from Highland Radio. It's presenter Chris Ashmore. Chris, what have you got coming up for us?
Yes, Greg. Now, this is something we did last year. If you worked for even a year in the North or in Britain, you could be eligible for a UK pension. And you can actually add a little bit to your pot. The British taxpayer will put in more.
Thank you.
And it's a bit of a win-win situation. So I'll be hearing from John Ring of Extra Pension, who specialises in this field.
And we have a clip from John, don't we?
We do indeed. And he gives some practical examples of how someone can benefit.
The maths on this are really crazy. And I don't want to bore people with maths. But essentially, you know, if you were to go and get a private pension, essentially, and even if it was you know, even if you were taking a lot of risk with a private pension, you could pay in one euro, and over 20-year retirement, you might get 5 euros back if things worked out well. And that's if you were taking serious risk with your money, essentially, in a private pension. This thing, at the cheap rate, you get 40 euros back for every one that you pay in. And at the more expensive standard rate of 1,000 a year, you get 8 euros back for every one that you pay in over 20-year retirement. And that's fully guaranteed. So compared to a private pension, for example, which is not guaranteed, even if you're taking a lot of risk in a private pension, it's still just nuts in terms of the return that you typically get.
Yeah, it's like effectively money for nothing, but it does, like everything, require a little bit of effort. Of course, you need your national insurance number, Chris, but all that's in the podcast. Very, for anyone who's worked in does this apply to Northern Ireland as well? So
yeah, so it's worth checking out, because you could potentially, now it depends on, there's different contributions, but you could get back for every one extra euro you put in, you could get 8 extra euro into your pension
there's
pot,
no
or as much as
like
40.
That anywhere, is
so,
there?
And it is being tightened up in the UK because, understandably, there's a lot of money going out, and people are asking, you know, should this continue? But worth checking
you.
Out.
Defo, yeah. Defo. Your second guest on the show.
Also, speaking to a head of enterprise at the local enterprise office, Brenda Hegarty. People this time of year looking at things like the business support clinic, the first one at the end of the month, and all sorts of supports and grants available. So we have a clip here as well, and she explains essentially what the local enterprise office does.
The local enterprise office is the government's agency. We're embedded within the local authority, Donegal County Council, and we're here to help people in business. So please do get in touch, and we will endeavour to give you whatever support we can to get your business progressing and competitive and competing well, both at a local level, nationally and internationally. With a particular focus now on, as well as the digitalisation and sustainability, but looking at exports, helping businesses maybe that is trading locally or nationally, maybe into Northern Ireland and going beyond, and again a wide range of supports to look at new markets and new customers outside of Ireland and what support you would need to get on your export journey.
Chris, that podcast live now?
It is, it'll be live in about 10 minutes.
Okay, so you can listen on demand and then broadcast on the radio then on Sunday, Chris.
Sunday after the 6 o'clock news.
And if anyone wants to contact you?
It's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Thanks so much, Chris. That's Chris Ashmore. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9.